Thank you very much, Katrina and Rod. Just moving quickly on now to the next speaker, we have Tim Jenkins who will join us now. Tim is a superannuation specialist and former senior partner at Mercer. For several years, Tim led the firm's Asia Pacific retirement business and had direct responsibility for its actuarial and legal consulting practices. In his prior role as Managing Director of Mercer New Zealand, Tim was responsible for Mercer's selection as a default KiwiSaver provider. Tim is convener of the Actuaries Institute Superannuation Financial Condition Report and Risk Management Task Force. So it's with that hat on that Tim joins us this morning. We've heard a little bit about the risk management framework for superannuation and ORFRs just a moment ago. So Tim, we'll welcome you to the stage now.
Thank you, Andrew, and hello, everybody. It's nice to see so many people here with an interest in superannuation. What I wanted to do today is actually step back. We've heard from APRA, from Katrina and Rod, about regulation. I wanted to take this and think about risk. Rodney talked about the role of actuaries in superannuation, and to start there, I was starting to think maybe actuaries only have a role in defined benefit. What the Financial Condition Task Force is trying to do is actually show the rest of the world that actuaries have a role in defined contribution, accumulation, as well as defined benefit. So in the last 20 years, we've had regulation, regulation, regulation. And the latest changes that have headed through, they've really started to concentrate, as we heard from Katrina, on operational risks, as well as the investment risks that we've been used to over the period. So the challenge is, how do we take the regulation and think about the risk management framework? How do we take this? And how do we, as actuaries, or people involved in the superannuation industry, start to make common sense about the tick-the-box compliance that can otherwise happen? So what the Institute of Actuaries has done, Actuaries Institute, is actually put out last year a practice guideline. This is perhaps a first. We've done this ahead of legislation. So if you worked in the health industry or the general insurance industry or friendly societies, the actuaries there, there is a requirement for something called a financial condition report. And a financial condition report really is looking at the holistic risks of a superannuation entity in this case to understand the risks faced by that fund and its ability to withstand adverse conditions. So the key here is actually to think about how this comes together. It's a holistic assessment of risk. So it's looking at the risks for the fund today, but also the risks the fund might face in the future as things change. And obviously, some of the same risks go from one part to the other. And then you take some of the actuarial concepts there of actuarial risk reviews. How do you take this and how do you start to think about risk tolerance? What should that be? How do you put these together and the various elements of the framework and make sense of them? And of course, dear to all our actuarial hearts, stress testing of all the various different elements there. To date, it's probably true with all the regulations that have been happening over the last while that very, very few funds have commissioned a financial condition report in its entirety. However, several funds have commissioned components. And what's interesting there is as they do those components, they keep coming back for more. We're finding that they're very, very useful for the boards. They're very, very useful for management. And potentially, if the board and management want to share that, they're very useful for APRA as well, because it actually shows how everything comes together and a true understanding of those different elements of the risks and the risk managements faced by those funds, whether they're defined contribution or defined benefit. So what I'm going to do now is actually go through four of these components that make up a financial condition report, just to go through some of those elements to give you an idea of what they are. I'm going to keep this short. I've been asked to keep it a very short presentation, just to give you the overheads of what's really going on, and then you can ask the questions afterwards in the panel session if you have any. So the first one that comes to mind, obviously, is what's the financial condition today? And the first thing you think about there is our reserves or the capital that the superannuation fund has itself, above and beyond the members' benefits themselves. And that's a really important part of assessing the financial condition of the fund. Of course, that's not just the operational risks and what you're asked to do on SBS 114. It's not just the 0.25% reserve or whatever level we happen to set that at in the future. But it's also the operating reserves as a whole, which the fund has or needs to be thinking about. And, of course, assessing the movement in those reserves is important as well, and actuaries and people who understand the data are really good at those sorts of elements. The risks, though, can go beyond those elements. You need to think about the assessment of the board's its own risks and also of the service providers used by those funds. So you think about those sorts of things. Do they have access for capital outside the fund itself? Does the board have a way of doing that? Obviously, a retail fund and an industry fund is in a different sort of situation. Is there adequate professional indemnity insurance? Are there limits of liabilities? And how do those apply? And what's appropriate there? For defined benefit funds, of course, there's a whole raft there as well. If you're in the UK, where I hail from originally, you're actually talking about the strength of the employer covenant. What's the likelihood the employer is going to be there and able to meet its requirements for the future, to meet those defined benefit promises? They actually can also look at the impact of the fund's business plan and a strategy and start to think about that and say, well, what's the impact of this on the fund today? And, of course, as we come on to that, what will be the impact tomorrow? You can think of sort of situations there. If a fund has recently had a merger, what if there was a different type of group of members? How has that affected the financial position today? Has it changed the average account balance of the fund? What does that mean for the fee levels? Are they sustainable? Has the fund decided its strategy is to simplify? If that's the case, if you're not meeting the exact needs of some particular group of members, do people leave the fund? What does that mean for people in those situations? Are you retaining members? Is that the strategy, a big campaign out to do that? Are you getting the return on the of the cost of that campaign to retain more members for the future? Has it led to increased fund membership? Where's it going as a whole? So you can start to see that actuaries and people like actuaries, statisticians, analysts, can start to take this and they can consider and they can comment there on all these different elements. And that extends right through to representations that have been made to fund members. Obviously funds try not to do that, but it's occasionally interesting what some of the marketing folk put out there. You know, they're saying this is our insurance premium, this is what the cost is. Or they say this is the target investment return. This is what we're going to do, and you change that for the future. What does that mean? What are you tied in to do? And these are all things which are the different risks in superannuation, which we're equipped to look at and boards and management should be looking at. So moving on now, thinking about the future. Of course, some of the same points headed through, not just the past. And we're looking here at the sustainability of a fund, its future financial condition. The standard bits there, you can look at this and you can say, how do I project the fund's assets, the cash flow, membership, where are these heading for the future? What does that mean for liquidity? If there's a run on the fund or a whole group of people leave and you've got a different investment strategy that doesn't give you the liquidity requirements. What does it mean for the fee structure for the future? Is that sustainable? Can you keep the same fees as you have now? Do they have to change? And what's the consequence of that for the future? So if you're doing a fund sustainability assessment, that would typically include projecting the fund's assets, looking at those fees, projecting reserves as well, and then applying to these an appropriate range of stress tests. What ifs? Those can be routine type assumption ones you'd expect, or there can be extremes. What if it's a 1% event? What does that mean? As we come on to that, of course, you're looking at and saying, well, do I know all the risks? What could happen? What's the consequence of that? The area that I find really interesting is actually the a member behaviour analysis. And you're looking at this and saying, well, what could this be for the future? What's going on as you start to go into the data? It's amazing what you find that you're not expecting to find for the future. So some of the examples there is you're looking at the level of voluntary contributions. They've been going up, they've been going down. What does that mean for the future? Do you get to a point, say, in 5 years' time where you have a whole component of defined benefit members from an old subsection of a fund, you know, who are getting to 55, 60, there haven't been no new members there for 20 years, and they'll be taking out, say, 25%, 30% of fund assets. What does that mean for the future sustainability of the fund? What do you have to be thinking about ahead of the game for that? And then you're looking at things like investment options. Which are the most popular? Are there certain trends? And that would have been helping the trustees and the boards, if they've been doing that, as they think about the different options for a MySuper for the future. And that's perhaps why we've seen so many movements to a life cycle investing, which perhaps wasn't expected to the extent that we've started to see. So we take this concept of thinking about risks today and risks for the future, and we say, well, what can actuaries do? What, you know, from there as well? What's particular actuarial about this? And of course, there's so many people who look at super funds from a different perspective. You've got your lawyers, you've got your regulators, you've got your different specialists here, there, and everywhere. And we're not saying that actuaries are the only profession to be thinking about risk management, but we think that the Actuary Institute thinks that actuaries have a unique position here to add to the situation, to the understanding of the fund, particularly when they work alongside these other fellow professionals. So one of the professions is the accounting profession, and they say, oh yeah, we do risk management, you know, we've got the risk management framework. But you think about what the accountants are up to, and the accountants are really looking at this from the perspective of, do I follow the rules? Am I doing compliance with my fund's existing risk management plan and risk management strategy? Do I tick the box? And they say, yes, you do, or no, you don't. This is what you have to change. I think the big thing here is to take it beyond that and actually to have a look at this in practice and look at this by the terms of an assessment of, does the process really work? Does it add value to the fund? Does it add value to the board? Does it add value to management, depending who the reporting is for? So the actuarial risk review looks to establish whether all risks have been identified. Of course, you can never actually identify all risks, as you know, but have you gone through a long list and been thinking about these and you've actually ticked off, yes, probably I think I've got most of those. You can look at that as actuaries and say, have you thought about X, Y, or Z? Or the interaction between the two, the correlations that come together. Are the risk ratings that have been put in place, are they realistic? Are they appropriate? Do you have the right controls in place? Are the controls that you use practical? And this goes on to a risk appetite. Does it actually meet the needs of the membership? As you start to look at analysis of the data and what's been going on, you can say, well, perhaps it does, perhaps it doesn't. Perhaps I should be thinking about some changes to the risk appetite options that I have or the risk tolerances that we have around those. And, of course, as you take it from that, it's all about the patterns really from there. Not every risk is foreseeable. And there will be some risks there that won't be addressed in the risk management framework. And the question then is, do you need extra reserves to help you with those situations? What is enough to help you with those situations in your fund? Leading on to stress testing, which we've talked about as we head through this, is a large component of a financial condition report there. And it's a detailed assessment, really, there of key specified risks, whether they're range of tests to do with unit pricing, liquidity, many other aspects of how the fund operates. So the approach is to be taken there, probably teaching to suck eggs in a certain sense, is look at the fund's policies that are in place against the actual experience, industry best practice, the actuary's knowledge of the fund itself, a review of the various models that have been used for the future, the what-if scenarios, and really looking at some extreme outcomes there as well. I mean, investment risk, you often think about what happens if I have a really bad year, what does that look like? But what about if your fund underperforms relative to member expectation year after year after year. Where does that place you with the portability and fund choice? Where will you be in the future? What does that mean for the fund and how it operates? So a stress testing, a really, really useful component. But the big thing for me is not the four on their own. It's when you start to put them together. So when you start to manage risk holistically, we believe that financial condition reports provide a framework for doing this. I think actuaries really understand how to piece together all the different elements of risk and take the different strands there and transform superannuation risk management from regulation-driven to value-add. This should work well for the fund's board, for the fund's management, and we think it should show good practice to APRA as well. And to conclude, whilst they're not regulated, superannuation financial condition reports, they really are an ideal way to ensure the holistic risk management of a superannuation fund. Thank you.